Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Regina. Lovely teaching. I want to thank Anne too. What a fabulous teaching. And I am I'm just real honored to be in this group of mighty companions who are just doing the work, uncovering it as we go along. And what I noticed in Anne's teaching this morning was that really, really critical factor of, I guess there's a couple, the recognition that I don't know what anything means is one, but the one that really struck me is the willingness to just go, okay, let's do this healing and let's do this healing and let's do whatever it looks like. And it's that willingness that just carries us through. And it's just, I just really appreciated hearing that from Anne. So thank you for that. Right back at you, honey. I'm going to play a song that's been playing in my head. Ego wants to go, well, maybe this is why. Maybe this is why. Maybe this is why. So it's a nice song. If it means something, it means something. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I'm going to play this song. So here we go.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love. You have worked and a while he won't call, but it's all in the game. Soon he'll be there at your side with a sweet bouquet. And he'll kiss
that song has been playing in my head for the 3-4 days. I'm like, well, why would I play that? And, okay, it's all in the game. And you know what? It was fun. It's a sweet song. Yeah. Don, you were trying to unmute me, but it wouldn't let you. Well, thanks. Thank you very much for being right there on the job. We made it happen. We'll slow dance later, Don. where to start? I was telling Anne a little earlier that last night I used a Southern euphemism to say how busy I was, and then later I went, is that politically incorrect? Is that insensitive? So I'm not going to actually repeat the euphemism here. I did not mean to be insensitive, and I think people have gone way over the, you know, just way beyond the pale. You know, what can you say? What can't you say? You know, come on. So anyway, but I am very, very, very busy. and there's a lot coming up, but not like in an, oh my God, I'm going to die way. It seems like there's a lot coming up that is very subtle that if I'm not watching for, I'm missing. And I know Ian was talking about that earlier, and the word that was coming to me was one I used with Regina in a talk we had yesterday about what was going on with me. And I believe this is what Anne was talking about. It's that ability to compartmentalize things. I think she talked about cognitive dissonance. And we do, and I do that, have always done that, have this ability to, you know, just so you can maintain, so you can function, so you don't really, so that cognitive dissonance, you know, doesn't throw you off course. You take this thing and you put it over there, and then you don't have to deal with it, right? You deal with what's in front of you. And I've become so adept at doing that that I don't realize I've done it. That I've stored that over there, you know, in the at least the pretend intent that I'll get to that later. And so those are the things that come bubbling up, particularly when you're willing for the healing, they're going to trickle through. Even though you keep doing that same thing, well, I'll put this on this shelf, you know, it kind of leaks off the shelf. But you have to be attentive for the opportunity, attentive to the opportunities for healing. So even it seems to me that on this path, even the willingness becomes more and more subtle. I feel like that's not being said well, but that's all that's coming. So, well, it was like, and maybe I'll start there in this journal, but it was like Regina was saying about looking up words. I was writing a sentence for last night for today's general healing tip. And the words just wouldn't work. It was like, this is in this tense, and this is in this tense. And when I put them together in a sentence, well, maybe I'll just read you the sentence. And so in General Healing Year One, we are we're going through the review. And so what we're all doing is our little mini reviews of, you know, the first 50 lessons. So, you know, you write the lesson and then you write the sentences that come to you that are personalized to your path. And all of us are doing it, the tip writers and the other folks in the class. So anyway, so for my tip, I was writing this little blurb on on 15. I'm trying to see, make sure I've got the right thing. Yeah. So, my thoughts are images that I have made. So, you know, what does this mean to me? What's my personal relationship with this thought? So, I wrote, I must learn to take responsibility for the world I see. I must use discerning awareness in where I choose to cast my attention. And frankly, I still have issues with that line. That's what got published this morning, but I think I really need to look at that line. But so I'm going to circle that and compartmentalize it, put it over here and go back to it later. let me read this paragraph. We'll see if I need to deal with it right now. But I must learn to take responsibility for the world I see. I must use discerning awareness in where I choose to cast my attention. When I see images in the world which call for my believing attention, I must ask, who sees these thoughts, rather than what do these images mean? Recognizing my responsibility is not a calling to feel guilty. Notice the connotation hung upon the word responsibility. Rather, recognizing my responsibility offers me a glimpse of the power of my believing attention. Only by recognizing I have a choice in how I perceive what I see, can I reclaim my power to create in loving cooperation with my brothers. And then here's the sentence that just couldn't quite pull together. It is this choice that I have a choice in how I perceive what I see. It is this choice I remember when I feel saddened or sickened or, and I originally wrote despairing by the images I see in the world. And you can see the syntax in that just didn't quite right. And then I went, well, wait a minute, what's the root of that word? Maybe that's the way to make it fit with saddened, sickened. And I said, oh, it's desperate. And I'm like, oh, shoot, desperate's a big word. So I looked up desperate, and I was really amazed by the definition for desperate. It was feeling, showing, or involving a hopeless sense that a situation is so bad as to be impossible to deal with. Again, that's a big word. So the whole reason I started talking about this a minute ago, purportedly, was to show that even just this little syntax error in this grammatical syntax error in the sentence gave me something more to look at. There's something going on here. And frankly, this is not what actually got published, and I'm not sure. I think the word despairing and saddened ended up in the tip. But then I had to change it around, you know, to like go. And I'm looking at changing it around, and I'm like, you know, images make me feel, wait a minute, can images make me feel anything? Isn't that the point of the lesson? So let me tell you where that sentence came from and see if it takes us anywhere. I was over at Regina's and we were working on some financial stuff for Awakening Together. And her homepage is Yahoo. And so Yahoo News comes up, you know, when you're like going between this task and that task. And, you know, I guess I'll give you the the newscaster's warning. The following images may be disturbing because they were to me. So I'm just going to tell you what came up. You can cover your ears if you like, but the headline was father beat his 5-year-old to death because she didn't do her homework. Or, you know, that's some words to that effect. And, yeah, Jay says he saw that. And Jay says he had a judgment, and that's what Regina said, and we talked about that. And, of course, that's the beauty of working so closely with Regina is when this stuff comes up, you get to talk about it immediately. So that's helpful. But for me, you know, and she talked about anger. And I'm like, that's not what I got. I wasn't angry at the guy. I wasn't. And I'm still not angry at the guy for beating his 5-year-old, his poor 5-year-old to death. It was more this despair. You know, it makes me despairing. I'm sorry, Don. I can see how it hit. I see actually from that, from all of you. I'm sorry, for that. Anne says she gets a flash of fear. Yeah. And Don's feeling a deep sadness. And so that's how I felt with this. It's, a hopeless sense that a situation is so bad as to be impossible to deal with. I mean, how do you combat that, right? And I wasn't mad at the guy. I really wasn't mad at the guy. It's like, it's a confused mind. And of course, what also went through my mind was, he didn't beat her to death because she didn't do her homework. He beat her to death because whatever he was believing, you know, he had whatever going on that he had going on in his life. And he, you know, and actually what I told Tom about it later was, I assume this guy went into some kind of blank space, you know, just beyond thought, beyond, you know, just not normally how we talk about beyond thought, but just beyond the thinking mind, just into, you know, this rage that kind of blacks out everything. I mean, surely that's where he went. I don't know, but that's where I imagine he went. And what I really felt was, you know, that's so hard. Was for the 5-year-old. You know, I mean, it's like when the person who's supposed to be protecting you beating you to actual death. It's like, oh my God. I would love to tie this all up in a nice, neat little bow. I don't know that I can. I don't know that I've. But that's there. That desperation, that sorrow, that sickening sadness. Those things are there, and I don't want to gloss them over. And I don't want to go, oh, that was this morning, and this is this evening when I'm writing my tip, right? I really want to look at those things. And, you know, interestingly, again, I started this thing saying, oh, my God, I'm so busy. You see the value of what Anne was talking about a while ago that Michael Langford told us about slowing down, about making the space. I mean, because it cannot be helpful or healing to just go, okay, you know, put a compartment, I'm going to deal with that later, or I'm going to shove this down here. This has to be looked at. And it also reminded me of, and maybe the rewrite actually got this in there, and I think it did. I don't have it right in front of me, but it reminded me of a story that Tom told me years ago. We were talking last night. We started living together about 10 years ago, 9 years ago. But he told me this 9 years ago about this teacher that he had, this ACIM teacher that he had seen in New York who you know, took a bus or whatever, a subway or something, back and forth to work. And one day she was getting on the bus and saw, you know, out the window, these teenagers, and one of them was being jumped by his companions, you know, just getting the heck beat out of him. And her response was to say, please tell me who I am. I'm like, what? When he told me that story 9 years ago, I'm like, what? But that's really where this has to take us back to. And I think that it does when in this little blurb of contemplation, the question has to be who sees these thoughts rather than what do these images mean? You know, because if I were to, internalize these things and, think that tells me anything about reality, that would be giving believing attention to the world. So it has to be, please tell me who I am. Who sees these images? And as Regina was pointing out, you know, she sees those things, and I frequently misquote Regina. So if you want the God's honest truth, you know, I have to ask her. But she said something to the effect of, she sees it as, maybe cycles in consciousness. Cycles wasn't actually the word she used, but you know, stuff happens, you know, sometimes it's good stuff, sometimes it's medium stuff, some, yes, cycle said, sometimes it's, you know, but this is consciousness. This is what happens in the world that we see. So when we're thinking about images, we can be thinking about a sunset or a five-year-old being beat or some kid being beat by the subway, right? And it's all cycles in consciousness. It's all what's up in consciousness. And none of it tells me who I am. None of it is cause for despair. All of it is a reminder of the importance of my task. And, you know, it's like we've been talking about in Gentle Healing Year One. It's not, this is not a part-time thing. If I'm inconsistent in the quest is the word I want to use, the quest to really get what I'm about and therefore what consciousness is about, what life is about, that's going to take, not going to take, but does take constant digging. You know, I can't live on the surface. I can't be blown about by, oh, this sunset or, oh, this god-awful event. I can't be distracted by any of it, good, bad, or mediocre. And I can use these events as a pry bar to pry me open, right? To pry that willingness open. So instead of shutting down in the despair over these things, this is motivation to really get it. You know, of course, Michael Langford, who sometimes I find, Michael, if you're listening, I'm sorry, who sometimes I find irritating because, you know, he's convenient monotonous and say the same thing over and over and read this 20 times and whatever it is. That's an exaggeration, of course. I don't think he ever said 20 times. But this is what he's talking about when he talks about increasing the desire for awakening. So just as A Course in Miracles told us, everything that ego has made, the Holy Spirit can use. These events, so it really is not what do these images mean, but rather who sees these thoughts. And it's not just as simple, who sees these thoughts? Oh, Jacqueline does. You know, it's really... it's an invitation to do the digging. What is really going on here? And I don't look outside of myself to figure out what's going on here. The only way that question is answered in truth is to look within. And that's through meditation, through self-inquiry, through dyads. So that, like Anne was saying a while ago, rejoice. So really, yay. So really, it's, there's gratitude for even this, for even the horrible news stories of the day. There's gratitude. It's not what I thought I was going to talk about today, but there it was. Let me get a tissue, 1 second. I don't know what else, where I want to go now. I am off script. Let me tell you what I talk about the subtleties, and that's the subtlety of willingness. And I just, you know, gosh, let's talk about being joyful, about being grateful, about rejoicing. This all gets so much more subtle, just everything. And I heard somebody talk about it not too long ago in terms of a spiral. You know, it just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, the first round on any issue is like, oh my God, I can't believe I never saw that before. And it gets more subtle and more subtle and more subtle. And that's my experience as I walk the path that I walk. And so what's come up for me lately, I mean, the last 3 days, maybe the last 2 days, maybe yesterday, is I'm seeing that while I feel surrendered, while I feel open, while I feel willing to step into the mystery, you know, all those things I ought to be feeling, I can see the subtlety of you know, okay, so I've lopped off the big noticeable limbs, but there's still roots in there. And it's time to get in and get those roots. And not in a, oh my God, I still got issues way, not in a, I need it to be done now so that I get the reward of awakening. But it's like, oh wow, look at that. That is still there. And so what's come up for me lately is this idea of control. Now I thought, shoot, I got this. I'm not going to, whatever comes, comes, you know. But I see it coming up in really, really subtle ways. I'm just trying to think if there's a story that even somebody said something in a recent meeting. That I thought the timing on it was not appropriate. And so I'm like, oh, wait, let me wait, stop before, because I want to tell you what happened. You know, I wanted to control the way this information came out. It was during a Zoom meeting. I want to control the way this information came out. So I'm interrupting. I'm trying to be nice. I hate to interrupt you, but shut up. I just want to express my gratitude for the ability to see these things on even more and more subtle levels. I don't know if there's a try not to apologize for myself. So let me just stop for a second. See if there's more to be said on that particular issue. I there is more to be said. And I was kind of just mulling that over that this morning, that the first response even now is for ego to go, well, it wasn't my fault. You know, she shouldn't have done it. Well, that's helpful. But still that knee-jerk reaction comes up even at these more and more subtle levels. So I get, you know, so I got to look that directly in the face and go, that's not it. That's not helpful. And that's where the willingness really comes in, is the willingness to take back the impulse to blame somebody else for the situation. Blame? Oh my God, didn't I deal with that 5 years ago? Blame? No, you didn't. Well, maybe I did. But it's coming back around to be dealt with again. I mean, that's the knee-jerk reaction, that's the natural, the human tendency is to go, well, wait a minute, what about, you know, if they hadn't, and it's just not helpful. It blocks the healing, you know, who cares? Because it blocks the healing that I would otherwise gain from this situation. So it's not about how people should behave. It's not about, yes, Regina says the knee-jerk reaction is equal to ego autopilot that she was talking about a while ago. Yeah. So, you know, even if at some level you're willing to go, oh, well, you know, that's just how life goes. And I'm sure she was dealing with her own issues and she's really excited about this or whatever excuses that I want to make for other people. It's still a blame game. If that hadn't happened, then I wouldn't have had the reaction that I had. But that doesn't get me to, oh, my goodness, looks like you might still have a control issue going on here. So, you know, NTI tells us about willingness. I love the recommendation, I think in Galatians, but I never can actually quote it. But it says, be grateful for your willingness as if it is everything because it is. So that's the bottom line. And willingness is what leads me to set aside the ego autopilot, set aside the knee-jerk reaction that goes, well, wait a minute. You know, somebody had to deal with this. This was coming out all jumbled. And now let's be willing to see what's really going on. Maybe so or maybe not. Maybe that story has some validity, but that doesn't do me any good. Am I willing to see that the impulse is the impulse to control? It's still to control. And I talk about, you know, I pay lip service to being in the flow. And often I am. But where am I not? See, it's not like, yeah, you did a good job. It's not about that. It's like, where am I not doing that? Where am I still getting stuck? If only for a moment, where am I still getting stuck? You know, it's like the image that comes in my mind is like those stick tights. You know, when you walk through the woods or through a field, and those things stick all over your clothes, right? I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not, you didn't ruin your clothes. But you still have, you know, the burrs. Yes, thank you, Cheryl. But you still have to stop and pick those off. Yeah. You don't just pretend they're not there. And again, you talk about the autopilot, the knee-jerk reaction. I want to think it's not there. That's what's automatic for me. At least at this stage of the game, in the game. that's what's automatic for me is to compartmentalize it or not notice it. So when Regina talks to us about, I loved the symbology of making your way carefully across that ice so you don't fall and bust your butt. Right? You've got to look very carefully. You've got to be very attentive. Because the autopilot is don't look. It is for me, and I assume it is for other folks, although I'm quite willing to be wrong in that assumption, I think. but that's the care and consistency that we're talking about. And I'll tell you, I was listening to Audia Shanti's, trying to see them, if I can see the book on my shelf, so I can tell you the name. Yeah, hang on. Oh, yeah, it's called The End of Your World, but I was listening to it on Audible. There's a part at the end, I don't know if it's in the written book, but on the recording, he's talking with Tammy Simon, who runs that whole Sounds True organization. She's interviewing. I highly recommend that, by the way. It's, oh my God, it's just amazing. Adya in this particular part talks about, or Adya talks in this particular part about, he's talking about Velcro thoughts. Well, maybe, you know, there you go, the verse, right? He's talking about these thoughts that you get stuck in or that get stuck to you. And she's like, so you don't have those anymore. And he's like, I didn't say that. I do have them. He said, what I'm talking about is that the gap now is so much shorter as to be almost imperceptible. But it's, you know, in the old days, you get stuck with a thought. And we all know this in our experience. We get stuck with a thought and we mull it over for a week or two or a month or a year. but, you know, as we do this practice, then, you know, then we take our responsibility. We accept our part in it. We use it for healing, you know, within what, a week, a day, 2 days. And you do notice that period gets shorter and shorter and shorter. How long? And for me, it's how long am I willing to roll around in my own stink? Right? How much suffering am I willing to endure? Till you go, oh, I don't have to suffer. I can just really look at this and not try and use my ego strategies to make it okay or project the blame onto you. Right? Because what you've what you finally come to is that I am the leader in my own awakening. I can continue to pretend to suffer. I appreciated that NTI said that in our reading last week. And James, you're pretending to suffer. But as we awaken, as we become clearer, we become less and less willing to keep up that pretense. We become less and less willing to suffer. And so I have often heard Regina say, it's so funny how thoughts aren't really words. Because this concept comes in my head and then I'm like, I can't get this across. So I wouldn't do that because that would hurt me. You know, I'm not going to judge somebody because I know that hurts me. So we come closer and closer to that recognition that this isn't about, you know, being enlightened. This isn't about being magnanimous, you know, being the clear one in the group. This is about not suffering. And it's a recognition that I create my own suffering by believing the thoughts in my head. By believing it's your fault. Right? I'm going to continue to suffer. By needing to be right, I'm going to continue to suffer. By needing to be heard, I'm going to continue to suffer. And so this is how inner wisdom uses what ego has made to awaken. The suffering becomes not something to be avoided, but to be explored. Why am I suffering? What am I believing? And to get to the subtlety where you don't just push it away. I'm not really suffering. To let go of the ego strategies so I don't have to feel anything. To dive right into the middle of it. Because the only way through it, beyond it, is to dive into it. Not to pretend it's not there. Not to pretend I've already dealt with that. not to pretend like it's your problem, not mine, but to dive right into it. What's here? What's here to be unknown? It's like opening a Christmas present, you know, with all the wrappings. Digging in. So that's what I'm grateful for. The other thing that's coming up with this busyness, well, it's actually the same thing. So let me talk about the subtleties of this control thing. You know, when I'm so, so busy, I'm like, I recognize in that, that is this control issue. Because if I didn't have a need to control the outcome, if I didn't have a need to get these 15 things done, it wouldn't matter if the 15 things got done. It wouldn't matter if I had promised somebody something and it's not going to happen. Or, and I can tell you, so I feel the need to be more specific. So let me be more specific. You know, I've agreed to do this teaching thing for Teachers of God. And I don't know if this is how it always works, but this is how it's working this time. You know, they send you something, they go, okay, in 2 days we need your, you know, long written out thing, the name of your talk, the questions the interviewer should ask you, a little narrative about your talk. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm planning for a retreat. I'm going to have, you know, 5 people in the house in 2 days. you know, my personal taxes are due while I'm on retreat. So that means I got to be, all this stuff, right? But I have an agenda here. And it's this agenda that makes me suffer. I want to control things because gosh, there's so much in that agenda. I want to show Regina. Regina was the one that originally referred them to me, right? Or referred me to them or whatever for this teaching engagement. I want to show Regina that she was not mistaken in referring me. I want to show the organization, Awakening Together, you know, the board and whoever, that I have the ability. You know, I'm stepping into this president role, that I have the ability to, gosh, I don't even know, it kind of remains unformed in my mind, but the ability to bring in a few bucks, right, that I can contribute in that way, you know, that I can do a speaking engagement, take that money, put into that into Awakening Together's call, you know, that I have something to contribute, right? And that's just to name a couple with Awakening Together. And then, you know, the other agendas are, I don't want to fall on my face in this speaking engagement. I don't want to look like the fool. I don't want to look disorganized. I want to get things in on time. I don't want them going, why do we ask her to speak? You know, I got all of that to add into this thing. So why is it critically important? You know, so why do I feel overwhelmed to make sure this happens right? Because I have an agenda. Why do I want to control it? Because I have an agenda. And I think I've just like hit the big points. there's much more in there than that. So I feel busy. I feel so busy. Oh my God, I feel so busy. But I'm pretending to suffer. You know, I'm thinking that I have to control things to make sure everything turns out right. And I forget, none of that's my business. In fact, there were a couple of big things like that, that one being one of them, which I got done last night. It was supposed to be on Tuesday, and I think I got it in at 12:48 last night. So that's close, right? And there was something else that I did. Maybe it was the taxes that I needed to do. And I thought, oh, my God, this huge, humongous thing's got to be done. And I got to file feds, two states, and a municipality. but anyway, oh, my God, this is huge. How am I going to do this and go on, pick my guest up and go to a retreat next week and get this Teachers of God thing done? And I just did it. Now, I needed a tiny little bit of information left, and so I got a tiny little bit to finish up. But it's like it comes right on time. You know, the things get done. They get done, you know, and then you pull this up and you type in that information and you put that, and then you do another one, you type in that. I mean, it gets done. So it's yeah, and I see Regina's written good enough here, and I missed exactly when that came in, so I'm not quite sure what she was referring to, but that I think that's really apt. It's good enough. I've done this thing. I've passed it on. That's good enough. I don't need to fret about. Let me stop this phone. I don't need to control the outcome. I need to do what's on my plate. Oh, 12:48 p.m. Thanks, Regina. Good enough. I just need to do what's on my plate. And if it didn't get done, well, it didn't get done. The only thing that would make me suffer that got in at 12:48 instead of 11:48, which would technically, you know, of course, the ego's never happy, because even when I thought I was going to get it done before midnight, I thought, oh, really, you know, getting it done by Tuesday means close of business. You know, you can't satisfy, you know, 5 o'clock, 5 p.m. Eastern time. You can't satisfy that anyway. But the point is, you do what you have to do, and you let it be. And this having an agenda interrupts that flow that Regina talked about. I mean, it's a trap. You're just buying into the whole thing. I'm buying into the whole thing. If I think that there's a way that things need to be done, and then I need to do them that way. But it really is a matter of trusting in the mystery. How is this going to get done? I don't know. It's a mystery. And really, that's been my experience. I sat down and went, oh, gosh, those taxes got done. That wasn't, oh, gosh, that Teachers of God thing got done. Wasn't that weird? Oh, this tip got written. Wasn't that weird? I mean, it is a mystery. And it's that willingness to live in the mystery is diametrically opposed to, oh, I got to control this thing. Oh, I'm so busy. I don't know what, I'm beside myself. So I'm willing to, really willing to see where those things are still hidden. I wouldn't have said, you know, 2 days ago, I wouldn't have said any of that was about control. I would have said the taxes have to be filed. They're asking for this. What has that got to do with control? A job half done is a job worth doing. Cindy says. Yeah, it's really about, and I see now, speaking about it, it's a contrast between trust or the willingness to live in that mystery and control. I mean, again, you talk about giving up the ego's agenda. Ego, like Regina said a while ago, ego's always, well, she didn't use the word agenda, but ego's always got an agenda. And that agenda will keep you chasing your tail from now through eternity. That's the pretending to suffer. At what cost? It's like we learned, and some of you are in the class now, I think, maybe none of us in this room, but it's like Michael Singer talks about the commitment to unconditional happiness. You know, you make, okay, I'm going to commit to unconditional, I'm going to be happy no matter what. Oh, but I didn't know I was going to wreck my car. Oh, I didn't know my wife was going to die. Or it becomes, what am I willing to trade my happiness for? What am I willing to trade my healing for? To be seen as responsible, to be seen as capable. I mean, all of those things I was talking about a minute ago. Ego will keep you chasing after those ideals, the way things ought to be, forever. That's why you have to make the commitment to healing, the commitment to the true desire. What do I really want? Do I want to be seen as capable? Or do I want to heal? That's the willingness. And, you know, I see it with little bitty things. Like, you know, Tom's here for a couple of weeks. And he thinks he's low on potassium. Okay, maybe he is. And so we're looking at more things to get him some more potassium. And one of the things is orange juice. So he's like, will you make me orange juice the night before? And I'm like, sure, I'll make it tomorrow. Well, the orange juice pitcher that he put away is nowhere to be found. So I can see, you know, I rush right in to go, well, how am I supposed, you know, to blame and to do all, and it's just so funny. So, you know, it's like Audrey was talking, the thoughts are still there, but the question is, do I want to continue to follow them? Do I want to, you know, where, what am I going to give my believing attention to? I can't find the orange juice. Well, guess what? The orange juice pitcher. Well, guess what? I'm just going to sit this orange juice over here. And then when he gets up, I'll ask him. What a novel idea. Yeah, right? Oh, me. You know, and so that, so I've noticed that as well, that really, even in these tiny, seemingly tiny little things, I did it just as we were coming onto this program, because Tom loves a good bath. The bathroom's right out the next room on the other side of that wall. And it's loud when he runs the water. And I'm like, he's going to have to learn what the schedule is around here, because that is very loud. And I'm going to be talking, you know, on the mic. And I'm like, oh, look at that. Look at that. He doesn't have to learn anything. You know, it's that automatic reaction. Where am I doing that? Well, lots of places. I see. I'm doing it with the orange juice pitcher and the blah, 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 blah. So, and there's no blame here. It's just, in fact, it's amusing to see how often that pops up. Well, they should have known, you know, that they needed to, whatever. So as not to inconvenience me. Really? Even if that's true in the way the world works, how's that helpful to me? How is that thought helpful to me? It's not. It's not what does this mean? Who sees this thought? What's going on here? Why is this thing always in the background going, yeah, but, you know, they. What's really going on here? Why do I want to continue to pretend to suffer? Why do I want to continue to create my own suffering? And it's just noticing. It's just noticing. It's just being open to that. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am. How grateful I am for the willingness to look for those subtle roots, those subtle burrs that remain. So my time's up. I love you guys. I appreciate you. I really appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you.